Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Roland Hoffman. Today we're going to tackle a very, very important subject because there are patients and there are patients. Some patients are relatively easy and routine. They respond to a simple lifestyle modification, better diet, a little more exercise, perhaps some vitamin supplements, some natural herbs. Other patients are very, very complex and enigmatic. And that's why we're going to talk about a new book entitled, Why Can't I Get Better? It's by an outstanding clinician. He is board certified in internal medicine, Dr. Richard Horowitz. The subtitle of the book is Solving the Mystery of Lyme and Chronic Disease. And it fills a very important gap because there are patients out there, and you may be one of them, or you may have a loved one who is one of them, who just simply don't get better with the standard approaches. And conventional medicine can't figure out what's going on with them. People in the realm of natural medicine try various things, and these patients are stuck. Dr. Horowitz is recognized as a real expert in this field. He deals with not just Lyme disease, but tick-borne illnesses and enigmatic infectious disease problems. He's been doing it for a long time. He is very well regarded in spheres of holistic medicine. He lectures all over the country, and he attracts crowds to his lectures. He's treated now over 12,000 patients in his practice at the Hudson Valley Healing Arts Center in Hyde Park, New York, which is right at the epicenter of the Lyme epidemic. He's been doing it for over a quarter century, and so he's clearly got a lot of experience. So welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, Dr. Horowitz.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, first of all, tell us a little bit about how you got involved in treating these challenging patients.
Well, I'm normally from Bayside, Queens. So moving up to the Hudson Valley, which is about 2 hours north from New York City, I moved into one of the epicenters, as you said, for Lyme disease, and I had no idea I was moving up here. Vassar Brothers Hospital had invited me to come up as an internist and to open up a practice. So I thought I was going to be a country doc. I thought I was going to move up and treat hypertension and diabetes, and I just didn't realize I was moving into one of the most Lyme endemic areas in the country. So when these patients started coming in with bullseye rashes, which is about half the people that have Lyme come in with the classic bullseye, and the other half, in fact, either don't get a rash, or the rash doesn't look like a bullseye. It's a solid red rash which is expanding, could be misinterpreted to be a cellulitis, an infection of the skin, or a spider bite. 75% of the people got better with antibiotics, but 25% didn't. So I set out on a journey over 25 years ago to figure out why these chronic patients were just not getting better. And there was controversies in the medical literature. It wasn't clear. So I went to medical conferences. I started studying the medical literature. And now, 26 years later, I closed my practice to normal internal medicine patients. I'm just seeing patients with Lyme disease and tick-borne infections who fail 10 to 20 doctors and can't get better. And my book basically explains this 16-point map that I've discovered. It's like going into a doctor's office with 16 nails in your foot, saying that you've got foot pain, and the doctor may only find one or two nails. I'm finding that there's many, many reasons why these people are staying ill, and it will apply actually to many patients with chronic diseases because Lyme is the great imitator. It imitates chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia and autoimmune diseases like MS, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus. So it's a big epidemic, and it's a great imitator, and it's important for people to understand the unreliable of the testing, how you make the diagnosis. So people really need to be educated about this disease.
Well, for some doctors, Lyme disease is just a matter of doing a blood test. And there are a couple that are recognized as a standard blood test. There's a Lyme serology. Sometimes that's not that accurate. So they go to a, quote, better test, the Western blot test. And then it's pretty straightforward. It's either there or it's not there. If it's not there, you don't have Lyme disease. If it's there, you get treated. And if you don't get better with antibiotics, they say, well, we've treated your Lyme disease. It's gone. You're just having the aftermath of Lyme disease. Can you respond to those dilemmas?
Sure. So the first part of the problem is that when we define chronic Lyme disease, the problem that I face with it is that, first of all, the ELISA test is not reliable. So what happened is that the CDC basically initially said, and this was on their website, that you're only supposed to use this two-tier testing of doing an ELISA followed by a Western blot. This was only supposed to be for health departments epidemiologically to screen patients for, in large populations, for Lyme. But what happened is it got kind of converted into the insurance community where they used this particular protocol. And we know that the ELISA will miss about half of the patients. So if a doctor was to just do an ELISA and it was negative, they don't usually go on to do a Western blot. Now, the problem is, first of all, it's an insensitive test. But even with the Western blot, which may be a better test, there's 100 strains of Lyme disease in the United States, and there's 300 strains of Lyme in the world. So to expect that a local laboratory is going to pick up Lyme with a Western blot that only checks for one strain, it's just impossible. You're not going to do it. And where it really gets confusing is the ticks now are containing other species of Borrelia, other strains. For example, there's one in the Hudson Valley called Borrelia miyamotoi.
They just came out recently. It's quite a sensation that they now have, and it's been caused some fatalities even.
Correct. I mean, this is a relapsing fever spirochete from Japan. We don't have a commercial blood test. It looks like Lyme. You get a Lyme-like illness. You can get a bullseye rash. You can get a meningitis. And it can cause fetal death. It can cause strokes, hemorrhages, bleeding disorders. And there's no reliable commercial test. So 10 to 20% of the ticks in New York, where we are now containing this particular form of Borrelia. So it's just not that reliable looking at the test. And these patients who come to me with chronic symptoms after classical treatment for Lyme, I found that they have multifactorial causes for their illness. And I call this syndrome Lyme-MCIDS. And MCID stands for Multiple Systemic Infectious Disease Syndrome. And this represents 16 potential overlapping medical problems contributing to these persistent symptoms in the Lyme patients. So the first point on this MCIDS map, the 16-point map, is infections. And people need to understand that the ticks are now containing not just Lyme disease, but multiple bacterial, viral, parasitic infections. They can all be transmitted at the same time that you get Borrelia burgdorferi, the agent of Lyme disease. And these patients who are infected with Lyme and these other associated tick-borne co-infections, they're much sicker. They're much more resistant to standard therapies. That's generally why they don't get better with a month of antibiotics, but they also have evidence of immune system problems, inflammation in their body, environmental toxins and heavy metals that get in. They can't detoxify these chemicals. They have nutritional deficiencies. The pituitary gland, the master hormone of the body, is affected by Lyme. They can't fall asleep. The parts of their body that make energy, the mitochondria, don't work. They have food sensitivities, imbalances in their autonomic nervous system, the part of the body that controls the heart rate and blood pressure. So if you've got all of these problems that have arisen from Lyme and co-infections, you can't just expect 1 month of antibiotics to get these people better. And part of the problem in medicine is we're taught in medical school, and you notice that Pasteur's postulate,
right,
there's one cause for one illness.
Right.
Is what we're,
it's like find a bug, kill a bug with a drug.
Right, except it doesn't apply to these people with chronic Lyme. These people really need to be redefined as Lyme MCIDs because they have multiple underlying etiologies responsible for these persistent symptoms.
Right. So, and that may be the reason why it seems that some people are treatment failures, that they have tremendous resistance to every antibiotic under the sun. That may be the case, or maybe that their other problems have not been addressed, that they actually may be successfully suppressing the spirochete or the viral agent or whatever is causing the problem. But they're still, it's like they're still a wreck.
Right. And I found that these tick-borne co-infections, they're playing a large role in keeping the people ill. So, for example, 13 years ago, I had patients come into my office complaining of night sweats. They had day sweats. They had night sweats. They had chills. They said they had this cough they couldn't explain. They couldn't get enough air hunger. And it sounded like Babesia, which is a parasitic infection. It's like malaria, and it's in the ticks. So I started checking the people in my area for it, and the standard test came back negative. So we sent out the ticks from my area to a lab in California, and it turned out that a couple of percentage of the ticks had it. Well, now, 13 years later, Dr. Rick Ostfeld, who's at the Institute for Ecosystem Studies in Millbrook, which is a few miles from my office, he's finding that over 40% of the ticks in my area contain Babesia. Now, when you have Babesia and you have Lyme at the same time, this is like having malaria on top of Lyme. So,
and it's a mysterious, I mean, sort of very hard to eradicate diseases. People, you know, even with standard conventional malaria, it's hard to eradicate. The drugs are you know, not that effective. And it's a mysterious disease because you can go for long periods of time feeling okay, and then it relapses and you feel horrible. You have fevers, night sweats, and malaise. And then it goes into relative hiding.
That's correct. And unfortunately, if you look at the medical literature, people think that 7 or 10 days of the medicines used to treat Babesia is going to cure it. But in fact, it's far from the case. I'm finding that we see persistent Lyme, persistent Babesia, persistent Bartonella, which is cat scratch fever. The ticks also picked up this organism, this bacteria. We see mycoplasma species. These people are just overwhelmed with multiple infections, and that's part of the reason they can't get better.
Right. So, explain the controversy in medicine, because, you know, clearly doctors who treat Lyme disease the way you treat Lyme disease, sometimes they're stigmatized. Sometimes they're even attacked in certain states for going beyond the conventional guidelines, treating patients more aggressively. And in fact, in some states, they've enacted laws that permit doctors like you to practice with greater freedom. Could you explain the controversy?
Yeah, this, you know, controversies in medicine have existed for a very long time. I mean, this goes back to the history of medicine when we look at people like Semmelweis, who is an obstetrician. He told other obstetricians, look, if I wash my hands, the women don't get sick and they don't die. And he was thrown out of medicine and ended up committing suicide. We had Barry Marshall from Australia who said that when you get stomach ulcers, it's due to an infection, a Helicobacter. Before that, doctors were taking out people's stomachs and giving them large amounts of milk and telling them you're stressed out and that's why you have an ulcer. So medicine is constantly evolving and changing. And unfortunately, early on with Lyme disease, it was basically looked at from the point of view of a rheumatologist and infectious disease doctors, where they only saw some of the autoimmune phenomenon that took place. And the trials that were done, which are these double-blind placebo-controlled trials that are considered the gold standard in medicine, the problem is that they already took people who had failed these same drug regimens, gave them the same drugs and said, gee, they didn't get better, I guess antibiotics don't work. But I participated in the first NIH trial with Dr. Klempner. I actually had him fly out to Newburgh Airport. I picked him up, brought him to my office. We looked at charts together with bullseye rashes, and he was very excited. But in my patients, they all have co-infections. They all have these overlapping problems. And none of these double-blind placebo-controlled studies ever looked at the 16 points that I'm finding are keeping people ill. So we just have to realize that these controversies have existed for a long time. We don't have all the answers. Certainly, I don't have them all. I've just been looking for answers because so many people come to me suffering sick for so long. But these controversies have existed for a long time, and some of the governments and medical boards have basically adopted the infectious disease model, that it's easy to diagnose and easy to cure. And there's another model, another guideline by ILADS, the International Lyme and Associated Disease Society, of which I was one of the founding members. And we published guidelines just like the IDSA, which is also backed up by scientific references. But some of the agencies have decided at this point to side with one side of the doctors. But unfortunately, that just doesn't work for patients. It doesn't clinically work. And as a physician, my job is to get people better. My job is to look at the science, excuse me, and to see what will benefit people. Is it backed up by hard science? So in my book, I have hundreds and hundreds of scientific references backing up everything that I do, so any physician who reads this book should be able to see exactly the science. They'll be able to read the case histories. They'll be able to see all of the stories of these patients of how the 16-point model applies. And I think it's going to be applicable to many chronic diseases because we don't just have an epidemic of Lyme. We're having an epidemic of autism, where 1 in 88 children gets it, and there's an epidemic of Alzheimer's disease, where they think it's going to bankrupt the U.S. by 2030. We have all these people coming down with cancer. And what's happened in medicine is we're throwing drugs at it instead of getting to the source, the cause of the problem. And this book is trying to get back to the basics of medicine, the roots of medicine, of let's get to the cause of the problem, which in this case really is multifactorial, and I think they're going to find for a lot of these diseases that many of the points on this model will apply to the diseases we're faced with in the 21st century, and we need to do long-term studies like Framingham studies they did for the doctors and nurses, where they looked for cardiovascular risk factors and what happened years afterwards when you treated their blood pressure, cholesterol. We really need to do the same things if we're looking to stem the healthcare costs and help all of these people coming down with these chronic illnesses.
Indeed. I heartily endorse that approach. Because, I mean, what's interesting about if you really can study and master Lyme disease and other chronic related infectious diseases and you understand them and their full ramifications, you can really open the door to understanding a wide variety of human illnesses. The model is applicable across many types of health problems. The question I would ask you, though, is it possible, because I think I've seen this, that two individuals could be bitten by, I don't know if it's physically possible, but by the same tick, and one develops, bullseye rash, is treated effectively with 2 or 3 weeks of doxycycline, end of story. The other patient receives the same treatment, remains chronically ill, and goes on to develop all kinds of long-term complications.
Yes, I mean, it's absolutely possible because everyone has different immune systems. Everyone's diet is different. Their sleep patterns are different. Their hormones are different. Maybe one person's adrenals are working correctly. Their immune system's working correctly. The other isn't. One person may already have underlying infections in their body that tend to reactivate when they get Lyme disease through a tick bite. So everyone is completely different. And clearly we do see this. I mean, 75% of the people can be cured in the beginning if you get the Lyme early, a true cure. But the 25% that go on when they get a bullseye rash and say, you know, doc, I've got a stiff neck and a headache and the light's bothering my eyes and I'm sound sensitive. Well, that means the Lyme's gotten up into your central nervous system. So we know that 3 to 4 weeks of doxycycline is not going to cure that.
So this is what might be called encephalitis or a brain inflammation or infection.
Exactly. And if they say, doc, I had a bullseye rash, but I've got tingling, numbness, and burning of my extremities, that means it got into the peripheral nervous system. Again, 3 to 4 weeks of doxy is not going to cure that. So it's important for doctors to know the clinical symptoms. And, you know, for people listening, there is a clinical way to know whether you have Lyme, even because the blood tests are unreliable. And this is basically how I do it. It's a clinical diagnosis by taking a proper history. And in my book on page, I think it's 34, there's a questionnaire. And we found that there is a cluster of symptoms that we see quite often in patients with Lyme disease. And people in my practice who presented with what I call Lyme MCIDs scored at least 46 on this questionnaire. So if you see, for example, that you're filling out the questionnaire and you've got symptoms that are coming and going with good and bad days, and the joint and muscle pain, as well as this neuropathic pain, this tingling, numbness, burning, it's migrating around your body, and you can't fall asleep at night, and you keep waking up, and you don't know why. And you're a young person, and you've got memory and concentration problems where you walk into a room, and you can't remember why, and you're forgetting people's names and phone numbers, you're reversing letters, and your memory is just off, and you're young, and your doctor checks you for thyroid problems, B12 deficiency, and they can't find it. Well, that's a classic presentation, a cluster of symptoms with Lyme. And if you then happen to, for example, have a urinary tract infection or a sinus infection, and the doctor gives you an antibiotic and you say, wow, my fatigue, my muscle, my joint pain, my nerve pain, my headaches, my memory, it's so much better. Or you say, oh my God, I'm so much worse with these antibiotics. Well, that's consistent with a Jarrett-Turksheimer reaction.
You're saying on the one hand, if you're much better, but also conversely, if you suddenly feel worse. If there's no difference, it's not as significant.
Correct. But if you feel worse, that could be killing off the bugs.
The so-called die-off phenomenon or Herxheimer reaction.
Correct. And women usually will report an increase in symptoms right before, during, or after the menstrual cycle. So considering this is an epidemic, one of the things I'm recommending to doctors is to routinely give out this screening questionnaire of Lyme symptoms because, you know, in the HMO model, you've only got 15 minutes. So if a patient has 24 symptoms coming into a doctor's office, you're never going to have time as a doctor to review that. But if you were to give them a symptom questionnaire and see that they have these symptoms that are coming and going and the joint and muscle pain moves around and they've got day sweats and night sweats, and a lot of patients won't tell you, and then you send off a tick-borne paddle with a Western blot, and you've got any Borrelia-specific bands or proteins, and I call this Lyme bingo, meaning if you have any one of these five numbers on your Western blot, bingo, you have Lyme disease. This is very important. This is the 23, the outer surface protein C, the 31, the outer surface protein B, the 34, the 39, and the 8393 bands. If any of those bands are positive, and you've got a multi-systemic illness, and your doctor has ruled out other diseases, then Lyme disease is likely. I mean, that's one way.
So actually, what you're stating, the criteria from some of the big labs, you know, like popular, well-respected labs like Stony Brook, is that several of them have to simultaneously be positive. You're saying that if, you know, even one or two of the ones that are Lyme-specific are positive, that's enough to make you think Lyme.
Right, because those criteria that they're using, that, as I said earlier, those were used by the CDC epidemiologically for health departments to screen large numbers of patients. They actually said on their website, they took it off a while ago, but they said that Lyme is a clinical diagnosis. So what I'm describing in this multi-systemic illness of coming and going, migratory, that's the multi-systemic illness you usually see with Lyme. And then if you've got the day sweats, night sweats, it's very likely you've got babesia. But the Lyme-specific bands on a Western blot will tell you whether you've got a likelihood of Lyme, because you have to ask yourself, if you've got these Borrelial-specific bands on a Western blot, how did you get it if you were never exposed to Lyme disease? Right?
Right.
You have to ask that basic question.
Right. So, you know, you live in the epicenter, as we said, ground zero for Lyme disease in the Hudson Valley of New York. But you know, for the average dweller in New York City, you know, maybe they, you know, go to Long Island, go to the country, go to the beach occasionally, hang out in the Hamptons, you know, do a little hiking. How prevalent do you think exposure to Lyme disease is?
I think actually it's quite prevalent. I mean, people have found it in Central Park. I have people from the Hamptons all the time that come to me that have it. We need to understand that this is a worldwide spreading epidemic. It's the number one worldwide spreading vector-borne epidemic. So what that means is when, for example, I was invited by the Chinese government to consult for them about 3 years ago. They were finding babesia in China, or what they thought was babesia, and they weren't sure. So they called me over. And they told me that 6% of the Chinese population, which was 1.3 billion people, was exposed to Lyme. Now, if you consider the test was an ELISA test they were using, which probably was missing about half the cases, you're talking a lot of people in the world right now who are probably suffering from Lyme disease. So the
these people would be unaware of it, or would they be just attributing their aches and pains, you know, brain fog, due to aging, due to other health conditions?
Exactly. I mean, most people are diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia because they can't fall asleep, they're depressed. I mean, Lyme causes depression, anxiety, sleep disorders, muscle pain, fatigue, same symptoms as chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia. And in the book, you'll see that I describe the same inflammatory pathways, when you look at the scientific literature, have been found for chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, just like for Lyme. So it's trying to get down to the common denominators. But these people are often misdiagnosed with autoimmune disorders, MS, chronic fatigue, fibro. So Lyme is known as the great imitator. And that's why it's so important for people to understand that if you're getting older and you're starting to have aches and pains and you're tired and got some headaches, your memory's not working, you can have a mild case of the disease. It doesn't mean you have to be severely affected, but it's important to look for it because it could become severe later on in life.
Indeed. And you talk about some adjuncts to antibiotic therapy. You're not just all about dosing people with ingenious combinations of antibiotics, although that's part of it, because there really is an art to prescribing this for all the different organisms that you need to cover. And sometimes people are resistant. And so, you know, it's not easy. It's not just, you know, one size fits all. But you also talk about adjunctive treatments like intravenous glutathione, something that I actually use quite often in my practice. Tell us about the role that might play in helping a patient heal.
Yeah, it's a great question. In the 16-point map, detoxification with toxins is a big part of why people don't get better from Lyme. I discovered years ago that glutathione is part of one of the, as you know, one of the six pathways of the liver to get rid of toxins. We all make glutathione. But the problem is that there's a lot of oxidative stress and free radicals in people with these infections, which is causing the inflammation. And I learned years ago, if I detox people, if I give them glutathione, whether it's intravenous or whether it's even oral forms of glutathione that are liposomal that get into the body well, amazingly, sometimes within minutes, people will tell me their fatigue is better, their joint and muscle pain's better, their headaches are better, their brain fog clears. And probably about 70% of my patients at this point get tremendous help with detoxifying chemicals. So when you have brain fog and you have Lyme disease, you have to be careful, because I try and get people off antibiotics as quickly as possible. The way that I do it is a Lyme organism has three different forms, and then it's in biofilms. So I combine different antibiotics to hit what's called the cell wall forms. It has a bacterial cell wall. It goes into these dormant forms called cystic forms, L forms, S forms, cell wall deficient, and then it goes inside the cell. So if you combine the medicines and then go after the biofilms, because it's now also found in biofilms, which is like the plaque on your teeth, that's a biofilm that's protecting the bacteria. If you go after this and go after the parasites, the Babesia, treat the co-infections, once I've knocked down the load of the bugs in the body, and I've not been able, I think, to eliminate them in many people, but you don't have to, I then use natural therapies. I use herbs like cat's claw, cemento, banderol. There are many different herbal products that are natural. And then we do a lot of detoxification, getting the toxins out. Almost everyone is testing positive for heavy metals at this point. And when you look at mercury, mercury mimics every Lyme symptom that people will come in with. So detoxification and glutathione plays an amazingly good role in getting people better, just like getting the hormones in balance. If the adrenals are low, they don't respond. So for me, it's constantly going back, if people are still ill from Lyme or chronic fatigue or fibro, going to the 16-point map and saying, what haven't I done? What else can I do to get my body better? And 90 to 95% my success is found in just going back to that model and applying it, and it does work for people.
There's a chapter in your book about what's called autonomic dysfunction. And maybe one way to illustrate that is with a joke. Maybe some people might not find it a very funny joke, but the joke is, what is Jewish VD? And the answer is weak and dizzy. I thought you might like that because you're a Queens boy. But the notion is that people who have autonomic dysfunction are often weak and dizzy. They're chronically, you know, feel like their head is swimming, ready to hit the deck. They're exhausted. Sometimes their heart races when they're trying to rest. Sometimes they can't get up a head of steam when they're trying to exercise. So that would be autonomic dysfunction in a nutshell. But tell us about it, and what do you do for these patients?
Well, you know, it's a good point you bring up, and this is why it's so important for doctors and healthcare practitioners to think about this differential diagnosis. But you can get with Lyme disease, dizziness, fatigue, episodes of passing out, palpitations, anxiety attacks, and you might think it was just from the Lyme, because Lyme does cause those symptoms. But autonomic nervous system dysfunction, these people come in with low blood pressures and fast heart rates, and one way you can tell without sending them to the hospital to do a tilt table test, which is the classic test to diagnose it, where the heart rate goes up at least 30 points, putting them on an angle, is if you sit these people for a few minutes and you check their resting pulse and blood pressure and stand them up, and every 3 minutes, three minutes, 6 minutes, 9, 10 minutes, check their pulse and blood pressure, what I found is we will see lowering of blood pressure and big increases in heart rates in patients in my medical office. It's kind of the poor man's way of doing a tilt test.
Right.
So
they call this POTS.
Yes. Yes, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, meaning you stand up and you get orthostasis, you drop your blood pressure, you get tachycardia, fast heart rates. If you don't give people salts and fluids and medicines like Florinef, fludrocortisone, midodrine.
These help the adrenals work better.
Yeah, you've basically got to get that blood pressure up. Sometimes they need TED stockings to get the volume up in their blood. You could treat the Lyme with all the antibiotics you want, but if you don't get the autonomic nervous system working, these people are still going to be dizzy, tired, passing out. So this differential diagnosis is real, real important, and that's why the map is so useful, because these patients are so complex, you might forget about POTS and dysautonomia.
So how do you get your physician to acknowledge some of these factors? I mean, we're putting this podcast out to all parts of the country, and I know people come to see you in particular and other Lyme specialists of excellence, but they're few and far between. You know, how can you implement this in a program where your doctor may be less Lyme literate?
Well, one thing that we do is there is a training program for doctors through ILADS, through the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Educational Foundation, ILADEF. I was the president a few years ago, and this is specifically for training physicians. And I've had probably about 100 doctors come through my medical office. They come for a week. We have lots of fun. I get that espresso machine going, so we're all doing double espressos all day long and having fun. And we see patients together. And I now can get them to read the book so they understand the model before we see patients together. But ultimately, ILADS does have a training program for doctors. And I think this book, because it's heavily based in science, and again, there's hundreds of scientific literature at the back of the book validating it, patients should give this book to their doctors and have them read it so that they can learn the model, because I think doctors will find it fascinating. It gets back to the roots of internal medicine. And for those doctors who've never learned integrative medicine, the biochemistry of the body and how things work, or nutrition, they just kind of forgot about it after med school, this will get them back to learn integrative medicine, which, I mean, you know so well as I know, it's absolutely essential to get some of these people better. I mean, internal medicine is great. There are many things we do wonderfully in medicine. But for chronic diseases, you really need to use some of the integrative model. And it's fully explained in the book. So doctors should be able to use it and apply it by just, you know, leaving out the 16-point map for patients when they come in who are complex, and going back to it and seeing what you can find. And I'm available. I mean, if doctors need to contact me, they want to train from my office, I'm always available to help.
Well, you know, that's great. And, you know, clearly this is what, you know, I'm personally trained in internal medicine, and we were trained to be problem solvers. We were trained to look at a patient's constellation of symptoms, and we recognize that it's not usually, you know, just one thing that is holding a patient back. It's often, you know, a network of problems, problems that beget problems, and, you know, a weakened organism breaks down in a lot of different ways. And this, I think, is really getting back to the fundamentals of the investigative holistic approach that we were taught. Unfortunately, too much of modern medicine is, you know, look it up and find a drug, and, you know, if you have a symptom, try and stomp it out.
Right, or rely heavily on testing. I think as internists, I mean, we were taught really to be medical detectives. And now in medicine, whether it's from the medical legal standpoint, I mean, doctors are just doing tests right and left. They need to understand that some of these tests are just not that sensitive. And you can't really make a diagnosis always. I mean, for example, there's no test for migraines. There's no test for pain. There's no reliable blood test for Parkinson's disease. These are clinical diagnoses. So it's not that clinical diagnosis is unheard of in medicine. It's just that with Lyme disease, people are relying on these tests and understanding there's 100, you know, different strains of this organism in the United States, and they're using one strain on the Western blot. You've just got to understand that you've got to use your clinical skills, and I really do think the questionnaire in the book with the score should be useful for doctors and patients alike to see if at least they have a likelihood of Lyme, because it alerts the doctor to that the patient has a multi-systemic illness. And then all you really have to do is ask, do you have good and bad days? Does it come and go? Does it migrate? Do you have tingling, numbness, burning that moves around? Those are very specific for Lyme disease. So there's some simple ways that we can screen people to see if they have it.
I have seen very interesting cases of patients who have, for all the world, multiple sclerosis, or they have a diagnosis of peripheral neuropathy, or they have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. And it turns out that ultimately they had a tick-borne disease, and many of their symptoms were reversed with this type of approach. So do you think it's important for virtually every patient who has those types of problems to undertake this kind of workup?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the majority, 90 to 95% of every MS case that I've seen has had Lyme disease. So, you know, going back to this multifactorial cause of an illness, not the one cause for one disease, you know, in the scientific literature, Lyme disease has been seen to be associated. They found these cystic forms in the spinal fluid of people with MS. They have found chlamydia pneumonia associated with MS, vitamin D deficiency. Mercury can cause demyelination, where it goes up into the central nervous system and causes MS-type lesions. So, you know, the question is, when we get these illnesses like MS, probably what I suppose is going to happen in the future is if we apply this MSIDS map that's in the book, we'll find that MS, for example, has demyelination because there are four or five problems. It might be Lyme disease, Bartonella, chlamydia pneumonia, vitamin D deficiency, mercury, inadequate detoxification pathways, where you have too many free radicals. That may be what MS is. And for Alzheimer's, they have found Borrelia spirochetes in the NIH data bank. Dr. Alan McDonald did a study years ago that was published that he took Alzheimer's brain biopsies from the NIH, looked at them, and found 70% had Lyme disease. Now, that doesn't mean that Alzheimer's is caused by Lyme, but we know that Alzheimer's is an inflammatory disease with beta amyloid. So again, it's possible that Lyme disease, other infections, detoxification problems, heavy metals, environmental toxins like volatile organic solvents, PCBs, dioxins, these can affect the memory. Maybe those are causing inflammation in people, also based, of course, on APOE and genetics. But we've got to get and change the model of how we're looking at chronic disease, number one, because it's breaking the bank of the healthcare system, and so many people are suffering. So we really need a paradigm shift in medicine. And I'm hoping that this book will go way beyond Lyme disease for people to realize, when you realize what's getting into your body, there are certain steps with your diet, your nutrition, treating these infections that we all have to look at if we expect to stay healthy.
Well, you know, I think what you're getting at is that a sick body or a sick entity is kind of like a wounded, aging wildebeest on the plains of African Serengeti plains, where your body becomes more vulnerable to the multiple infectious agents that are around, and it's the terrain. If your terrain is poor, your terrain becomes much more susceptible to infections which might otherwise be warded off. So infection's part of the picture, but also improving the terrain so the body has better resistance is a very ancient idea in medicine, and this is really what you're all about.
Right, and it's been forgotten. When they did these double-blind studies for Lyme, they didn't look at the terrain at all. So, you know, just looking at the points on this MSIDS map that's discussed in the book and just, you know, looking at what causes inflammation. Most doctors don't check for zinc deficiency. I'm finding 25% of my patients just from LabCorp Quest in the blood have zinc deficiency. Well, that causes inflammation. That causes elevations of these inflammatory molecules called cytokines, TNF-alpha, IL-1, IL-6, these are the inflammatory molecules that give you Lyme symptoms, that cause the fatigue, the aches and pains, the headache, the memory. If you can lower down those inflammatory cytokines, people feel better. But doctors don't look for zinc deficiency. They don't always look for food sensitivities and leaky gut, which again can cause these inflammatory molecules. They don't look at these multiple infections. If you don't get to sleep, which Lyme patients don't, you have inflammation with elevations in interleukin-6. So we've got to get back to the terrain of the body, you're right, about getting people stronger, because that's ultimately how we fight these infections.
Oh, that's excellent. You know, I think you really summed it up beautifully. And your book, I highly recommend, Why Can't I Get Better? Solving the Mystery of Lyme and Chronic Disease. Really, I admire your energy and your ability to synthesize all this information in a readable form that I hope gets out to wide segments of the populace and wide segments of the medical community as well, because they need to begin thinking about these types of illnesses this way and not just find a bug, use a drug.
Yes, yeah, thank you. I mean, I've really been concerned about this epidemic, seeing people go to 10 to 20 doctors before seeing me. Their lives are just destroyed by this illness. It's destroying the fabric of the healthcare system. It's affecting the future generations of this country. And I just don't see that people are paying attention. So I just felt it was my duty to get this book out to make sure that I'm able to educate the public and healthcare providers so we can really help these people that are suffering so much.
Great job, Dr. Richard Horowitz. Do you have a website as well that provides information?
We do. My office email is medical@HVHAC, that stands for Hudson Valley Healing Arts Center, HVHAC.com. And we're working on the website right now. I've been so busy, I haven't even seen what's on the website, because
right.
we put one up, but there should be a website up.
I can imagine because, your patients are challenging. They're literally probably thousands of patients that are under your care at various stages, and you still manage to crank out a fabulous book. So clearly, you got a lot of energy.
Well, I also have to thank my office staff who supported me through this and my wife, because every night, every weekend, and every vacation for 4 years while working full-time, I did this book. So it's her love and support and good cooking which has got me going here.
It's obviously a labor of love. Thank you very much, Dr. Richard Horowitz. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks very much for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.